The Holy Gospel according to Luke. Glory to you, O Lord. When the days drew near for Jesus to be taken up, he set his face to go to Jerusalem. And he sent messengers ahead of him. On their way, they entered a village of the Samaritans to make ready for him. But they did not receive him, because his face was set toward Jerusalem. When his disciples James and John saw it, they said, "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them?" But he turned and rebuked them. Then he went on to another village. As they were going along the road, someone said to him, "I will follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said to him, "Foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." To another he said, "Follow me." But he said, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." But Jesus said to him, "Let the dead bury their own dead. But as for you, go and proclaim the kingdom of God." Another said, "I will follow you, Lord, but let me first say farewell to those at my home." Jesus said to him, "No one who puts a hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. At such a decisive turning point in the Gospel of Luke, at the moment that Jesus concludes his ministry in Galilee and sets his face toward Jerusalem, it's no surprise that we have an opportunity to reflect on what it means to follow him. We know what's in store for Jesus in Jerusalem. And we know what's in store for faithful disciples in any age who come face to face with hostile power. The cross is always in view for those who are drawn to follow in the way of Jesus. And isn't that terribly counterintuitive? Jesus has no comfort to offer would-be disciples in our gospel today. "You intend to follow me?" he asks. "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." That is, "Follow me and you'll discover that you have no place to call home, either geographically or culturally." "You intend to follow me? Let the dead go and bury their own dead. But as for you, go and proclaim the kingdom of God." That is, "Follow me and you'll discover that the demands of discipleship supersede your other obligations." "You intend to follow me? No one who puts a hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God." That is, "Follow me and you'll discover that faithfulness requires an undivided loyalty and focus. There's no going home again." Who would willingly submit to these criteria? Isn't it reasonable for even the most ardent disciple to expect a basic standard of living, to honor the memory of her loved ones, to attend to her closest relationships? But Jesus is unequivocal. "If any want to become my followers," he insists earlier in chapter 9, "let them deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me." The rigors of discipleship are not lost on biblical interpreters. Consider the following summations of today's gospel. These are just a few samples. Jesus is calling and he wants a straight answer now. You're in or you're out. He makes it clear that answering his call and living the life of discipleship requires no less than everything. And another. In order to have true meaning and integrity, discipleship must be our identity. We must recognize and live it in every part of our being. And another. Commitment to discipleship leads to a testing of loyalties on every front. And finally, discipleship can tolerate no conditions which might come between Jesus and our obedience to him. Jesus' standard for faithfulness is so lofty, who can measure up? And yet, from generation to generation, he has called disciples to bear witness to God's justice and mercy, pointing the world to the cross and resurrection as signs of God's solidarity with a suffering world and the hope of something beyond our suffering. What is it about Jesus? Why have so many of us come to trust that his is the way to life? And life abundant. Are you familiar with the phenomenon of imprinting in baby birds? Shortly after they hatch, birds form a lasting attachment to the first object they see, hear, or feel. And remarkably, they develop their sense of species identification from that attachment. Hatchlings usually imprint on a parent, and that parent teaches them to be a bird. Occasionally, however, and you've probably seen a YouTube video or two, they imprint on a human or other animal by mistake, in which case they identify permanently with that species. Regardless of species, however, the object of imprinting serves as the hatchling's only source of refuge and care, ideally inspiring trust and a willingness to follow. Can we reimagine what single-minded commitment to Jesus might mean in light of this metaphor? In other words, what happens when we imprint on Jesus? How does our lasting attachment to him form us as people of faith, hope, and love? And how does he provide refuge and care? Dear church, we often frame the call to discipleship in terms of the cost to us. But what if we frame discipleship in terms of the trustworthiness of the one who calls? It's true that when Jesus beckons, he expects us to give everything, to devote our whole lives to his purpose. But he is fundamentally worthy of our devotion, going ahead of us in every risk, every loss. If we give everything, we give it for the sake of the one who gives everything for our sake. If we give everything, we give it for the sake of the one who gives everything for our sake. I'm reminded of a beautiful song in our worship resource that recalls the biblical image of Jesus as a mother hen. By way of conclusion today, hear the first two verses and rest in the promise of God's love made known in Jesus. that we might imprint on him and conform our lives to his.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.